Good morning, everybody, and welcome to October 17th. And this is episode 43 of the Bitcoin Veterans Spaces. My name is Coleman, and I am your host today and every day at 10 a.m. Eastern. And I want to give a quick shout out to everybody listening out there. Punch Plate, I see you in the audience. Good morning. Lynn B., Bob Van Kirk, Wade, Hunter, Death in Bitcoin, Steam Kelly, AC, Allison, and everybody else out there. Good morning, good morning. Anybody wants to join the stage and join the discussion, please feel free to send a request link and we can get you up here on the panel. But while we have more people trickling in, refilling their coffees, getting their water, still getting the gunk out of your eyes if you just woke up on the West Coast, I want to make sure you all understand the reason that we do this every weekday. And it's to defend the values that our founding fathers fought so hard for. Now, our rights to liberty and free speech, freedom of religion, the right of due process of the law, and the freedom of assembly. These are the rights that aren't allowed to be infringed upon. And it's important that we go out there and show the world why that is so important. And we are showing the world right now in North Carolina with Operation Gabriel. We have boots on the ground. We have guys going out there, guys and girls, going out there and showing that we don't need government permission to help our fellow Americans. And that's what Bitcoin is about. It's decentralization. We don't need to have a centralized authority. So I'm really, really excited for what we're doing out there. Hunter, I see you in the audience. If you have a chance, I'd love for you to come up here on the panel and talk a little bit. For all of you who may not know, Hunter was just out there in North Carolina helping Shane and Randy Kelly. So Hunter, if you could, feel free to jump up here. I see we have Joe Colasari that jumped in the audience. Good morning, sir. Feel free to join us. Did anyone have a chance to, well, I guess the biggest news yesterday was the Harris-Fox interview. Give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down if you all had, if you had a chance to watch that interview. It was very interesting. I think one of the biggest takeaways I got from it was Harris's ability to not answer questions. It was really remarkable. I watched it twice this morning just to make sure I didn't miss it, but I don't think she honestly answered a single question. She was able to dodge them. She was able to walk around them. So the poly market really felt the same way as well. So Trump's lead jumped again last night. And so right now, Trump has 61% of the votes, or is projected, with 61% and Harris is at 39%. So it's just very interesting coming through. So we'll definitely hit on that, but we have Hunter up here right now. So good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Hey guys, good morning. What's going on? I'm doing well. As far as Operation Gabriel and giving you guys updates, I'm currently not there. I've been back to home life here for a little bit, but I'm still trying to coordinate supplies as much as I can. And if you guys do want to help out, we do have boots on the ground there. They are already synced up with different distribution sites. Like I'm trying with my church right now, and just a lot of local entities that are around me that are doing their own supply runs. You know, I'm trying to make those networks and figure out if they have spots that those supplies need to go to. I know there's a great need for cold weather gear. Space heaters, you know, things like that that can help these people as we transition into the colder weather. There's still a lot of people that are suffering and unfortunately dying because of how cold it's getting up there. So I've kind of I'm still trying to keep in touch with the guys that are out there, but I'm doing more of the things that I can do from home right now until I can actually get more time off to go back up there. But I know those guys are still pushing real hard and trying to get all the supplies to the people who are in need.
Yeah, so right now we have Jordan, Shane, and Mike with the Bitcoin Veterans in North Carolina helping out. And so for everyone who might be new with Operation Gabriel, y'all have raised, allowed us to raise $115,000. So again, I want to say a huge thank you to everybody who helped contribute, to everyone who helped share that link. It really means a lot, and we're going to be able to do a lot of help with all this money. And so at the moment, we're stopping donations. If you still want to donate, the link is still up there, but we're not really pushing for more funds right now. Right now, we're trying to utilize that money to the best of our ability. And so, like Hunter had said, it's getting really cold out. It's starting to get close to freezing at night, and a lot of these people are still without power. So we're trying to get them cold weather clothing, get them generators, just to make sure that they're able to stay comfortable in the situations that they're in. And one of the biggest things we want to keep stressing, because our attention span is just so short, this isn't going to be a situation that's fixed over the next couple of days or weeks. Unfortunately, just with the amount of devastation that happened in this area, it's going to take months to get these people back up and running again. So this could be a continued effort, and we're going to keep you updated with our journey along the way. So again, I want to give a huge thank you to everybody who's helped us with this. If anybody wants to jump up and dissect that Harris interview that she did on Fox, feel free to jump up here. I'd like to get some different points. Hunter, you're already up here, so if you've seen it and you want to talk about it, feel free to jump in. But it was really astounding. Go for it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was kind of comedic. I mean, just to see how she kind of filibustered him and avoided every question, and how everything just pivoted to Donald Trump. I mean, I think the guy from Fox did a great job of trying to put her in a corner and answer for her own record, you know, as the current administration. But she just kept pivoting back to Trump. So I don't know how many eyeballs saw that and how many minds were changed by that, but it was comical to me because she just can't hang at all when she gets any type of real pressure from the interviewer. And I'm really excited to see if she's going to go on the Joe Rogan podcast. I've heard that rumor, and I think she will completely fall apart in that kind of setting. So hopefully this is just kind of a preview of more of this to come, because the American people need to see what they're getting. And when her talking points run out, she really, you know, stumbles hard. So pretty comical to me.
Yeah, she does stumble hard. And I think it's, like you had mentioned, it's always the previous administration's fault. So they keep blaming Trump for everything that's going on. And it's just like, well, you've had almost 4 years at this point to fix it. How can his administration be the cause for all the problems that are currently going on? And so I wish more people would give pushback on that.
I would say, too, I wish she would just talk about her policies more, let her kind of explain how her economic plan works, you know, because I think that would be pretty eye opening to the public, too, to see that there's just no depth there to that. It's just a little talking point that she's got. I want to see her actually explain her immigration policies, her economic plan, all of these things. But no one seemed to be able to get her to, you know, talk about it. She has ways of squirreling her way around all that.
No, and that's a perfect point, Hunter. The only thing I've heard her fully commit on several occasions is the first-time housing allowance up to, I think it was $25,000 assistance for first-time homeowners, and then the small business startup tax relief. And so instead of being, I think it's a $5,000, she wants to increase to $50,000. So if anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, those are the only two policies of hers that I've heard her speak about consistently. So again, it doesn't matter what side you're voting for. That doesn't really bother me. The thing that concerns me is that she's not stating what she wants to do. And that's the most frightening thing. If she has no idea what she's going to do, who's pulling the strings? And how do you know what you're voting for? So again, take a stance. You can definitely change your stance as things progress, but make it clear what you want to do. And she's just, her refusal to do that is very concerning to me. And so that's just kind of my biggest.
Coleman, did you see how she went back in a corner? She said, "I will follow the rule of the law too." So when she was asked to own up on things she said, if she was going to actually do the things she said, like the gender transition of illegal immigrants or prisoners and all that, she said, I will follow the rule of the law or the laws on the books. I thought that was kind of a Weasley comment as well.
Yes, and it's also concerning because I think it was just prior to that rebuttal she was giving where I'll follow the rule of the law, she was talking about how her administration wants to increase the amount of judges. And so if you increase the amount of judges, you're able to essentially sway the way the law is interpreted. So would it give you an advantage to follow, quote unquote, the law as you see fit? So you're right, Hunter. That's a good kind of point to pick out of there and kind of sit on and watch. But I just saw Gary Leland joining us. So I wanted to say good morning, sir. If you want to hop up on the panel, we'd love to hear from you. All right, so we got Bitcoin Kearney up here. Good morning.
Hey, what's up, guys? I noticed that whole, like, I'll follow the law repeatedly phrase, and it made me actually think maybe there was some underlying psychology going on that Trump is viewed as, like, the law and order candidate, so she's trying to drop that little subliminal messaging, not so subliminal, like, I'm the law and order one.
That's one way to interpret it. I think you would be really hard pressed to deny that they are weaponizing the law right now in their favor. I would point to January 6th as one example, and then the countless lawsuits that have been pressed against President Trump.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think it really matters what they actually do. It's more of like the repetitive phrase of like, I'm getting this into your head. I'm the law and order candidate. Don't look at my actions. Look at what I'm saying.
I think it plays off too, like people not willing to dig deep and actually understand these things. They just hear that and it's comforting to them. Oh, she'll follow the laws on the books. Like, I think there's a large swath of our population that is just so politically illiterate that they're just, you know, interested in bread and circuses, right? They're interested in the football game going on or their gossip TV shows that, you know, they have such a surface level understanding of the issues to hear a candidate say that she'll follow the law. Well, that's good enough for them. That's just a reassurance they need to vote for her. And Orange Man bad.
Yes, that's the biggest thing. Orange Man is bad. But remember, the laws and the policies can change. And so just because your political candidate is in charge or an officer as a majority, and they're able to get through certain laws, that can change really easy over the next 4 years. And then what happens when they're following the new current laws and it goes against what you think? So again, it's a slippery slope. I don't think people really look on the, what happens if the other team wins and how that can be bad. So, but unless anyone else has anything they want to comment on that, we'll go ahead and move on because the Bitcoin ETFs are on an absolute tear this week. Yesterday, the ETFs removed 6,671 Bitcoin. So BlackRock was the clear winner. They took off the market 5,805 Bitcoin, Fidelity 218, Bitwise 190, ARK 170, and VanEck 86. So over the first 3 days of this week, the ETFs have taken 20,589 Bitcoin off the market. So there's definitely starting to become a swing or a switch in the buying. And I think it is something to do with seasonal. You know, it's Q4, people are able to start allocating funds differently. But it's definitely something we're going to want to watch and see how this goes, as it's those are big numbers. Hunter or Bitcoin Kearney, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I mean, I just look at the ETF as a big honeypot, you know, not your keys, not your coins. I don't know. I'm too much of a maxi to. I mean, I like it for institutions coming into Bitcoin and adoption, but the whole thing seems like a honeypot to me. You know, I'm not a fan of the ETFs. I like that it's bringing awareness and it's news for Bitcoin, but I'm a skeptic on it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I'm sure some of you guys have to have the same role, but like, I'm holding my mom's keys. And she's a lot closer to retirement age. And it's like, I want to put this into a Roth because, like, she'll probably use it before they come for the honeypot. But at the same time, it's like, I'd rather not have this under anyone else's control. So it's a tough spot to be in. The other thing about the ETF, I'm always curious. I've never heard, like, a solid answer about this. But I've heard people like Larry Lepard talk about paper gold and how they've been able to suppress the price with the paper gold. And I'm just so curious, like, are they able to do that with Bitcoin right now? Is anyone checking their UTXOs to see if the Bitcoin's actually there? Like, I have no idea.
I mean, go for it, Hunter. I think we've had that argument about Coinbase improving their reserves, right? I know that the River Financial had proven their reserves, and that gave them a lot more credibility. So do these ETFs have one-for-one for the Bitcoin and the paper Bitcoin? I have a lot of concerns about manipulation as well. And until they can prove that they're one-to-one, I mean, they could be no better than FTX, possibly. We don't know, or Binance.
Well, I think there's a lot to unpack there. So the first part with the ETFs, I do have mixed feelings with it. I think the best choice is to hold your own Bitcoin in a cold or in a hardware wallet, cold storage. I use Cold Card as my Bitcoin wallet. I love those guys. I think their wallets are amazing. I also think that it is not difficult to store your own keys. I think we make it seem more complicated than what it is. Is it scary at first? Absolutely. But with that same point, it's not difficult to hold your own Bitcoin in your hardware wallet. And so I think we really have to make that point come across. You're only memorizing 12 or 24 words. You know, you're not having to go down and do some elaborate plan or scheme to hold it. It's just 12 or 24 words. It's very simple. You go ahead and you get your seed phrase and stamp it on a punch plate metal plate from punch plate, and you're good to go. You have it, it's done, it's yours. The reason I would like the ETFs is because there are people, and I'll use my mother and my mother-in-law as an example, who have a difficult time with technology. Bitcoin Carney, you said you're holding it for your mom. You know, there's some people who just don't have that relationship. So I would suggest if you want to get access to Bitcoin, that may be the easiest way for you to do it. There are a lot of risks with it, but that may be the best option for you. So again, I see both sides of it, of that argument.
You're tapping into convenience, right? So like Bitcoin's, part of the ethos is to not have to trust, not have to have a third party. It's supposed to be peer-to-peer, but out of convenience, we've created these where you buy Bitcoin. Crap, just lost my train of thought.
Exchanges,
thank you. Yeah, out of convenience, we have exchanges, and that's like one level of convenience. And now the next level is the ETFs. And so I just feel like we're getting further and further away from the ethos of Bitcoin, and it's got to be a balance, I guess, because adoption is going to be so hard if it just stays cypherpunk, you know, peer-to-peer. And this is making it more adoptable, bringing this in, but you also are making a compromise on what Bitcoin was designed to be.
You know, it'd be cool. What I would love to see, I don't know if anybody here knows anybody like Unchained, but like it'd be awesome if they had like a FOMO protection. Like I actually have some of the ETF because I just had a rollover IRA and I used it for it. And I'm like I know without a doubt that like Unchained is better where I have my own keys. But I know also with my luck, as soon as I sell that ETF to send it over to Unchained, Bitcoin is going to moon and I will forever be poor. So if anybody knows anybody at Unchained, tell them they should do like short-term FOMO price, like quantity lock-ins. Like you're sending us 20 grand at 60, you're getting, you know, that much Bitcoin. That'd be cool.
Can you explain or elaborate a little bit on that, Eomar? So are you saying that it should be lock or?
Say right now, like say I have 60 grand in my, or whatever Bitcoin's at today, 68 grand in my IRA and I own the ETF, right? Now it would make it much easier for me to sell all of that and then, you know, have my IRA handler like write a check over to Unchained, you know, to get onto their platform. If they're like, okay, like you have enough for one Bitcoin, like, you know, give us this nominal fee. We'll do like a short-term loan. And then basically they'll buy the Bitcoin and hold it until like the check gets there. This way you're not at risk of like price action and stuff. It's probably an irrational fear on my part, but it's still there.
So basically there's like a lag right now.
Yeah. You know, it's going to take 2 to 4 weeks for like the process to go from, you know, the IRA, current IRA holder that has the ETF in it to like Unchained. So like, if they're like, okay, like, you know, you showed us all the documentation, you have, you know, you have the assets there, you say you're going to send it to us, you know, you pay this fee, and then, you know, we'll buy the Bitcoin and we'll hold it for you until that check gets here, and then we'll transfer it over to you, and it just locks in that price.
I like it. It's an interesting way to look at it, but there's always the flip side where you buy it at the higher price. 4 weeks later, when your check clears, the price tanks.
10%. Hey, I don't. I don't care about that. I don't think anybody going on like trying to make that move to Unchained actually cares about like the downside price action. You know, like, to me, that's like a short term thing. I don't see that as like a long term concern.
So just the upside. Yeah, it's interesting. It would be an easy way to collect a fee from Unchained or River to do that. So
yeah. So if any of them are on this call, make it happen.
Yeah, definitely.
I threw an old 2010 post of Hal Finney's up in the nest talking about Bitcoin banks. I think it's kind of pertinent to maybe proof of funds. There's got to be a way.
You mean to show your reserves?
Yeah, exactly. Like, if he thought it was doable or possible to have a Bitcoin bank, there must be some efficient, effective, trustworthy way to make it happen. Verifiable, not trustworthy.
Well, I don't understand. River does it. That was their big thing they released last month during the whole Coinbase, where people are questioning whether Coinbase actually had the Bitcoin for BlackRock. They came out with proof of reserves, and it's just a quick link. You can do it on my app, or I can do it on their website. So I'm not really sure why the other ones are so hesitant to do it. I really don't think it puts you at that much more risk. And please correct me if I'm wrong with that statement. But I just
wasn't a matter of like not trying to dox like how much people have in their wallets. Wasn't there some complications there, and that's why they didn't want to do it?
But I don't understand how that would be a risk to dox them, right? Because you're going to have the Bitcoin, and if you're keeping it with an exchange or a broker, they're going to have it across maybe one or, you know, half a dozen different wallets. So I don't get how that would dox a single individual. Correct?
Yeah, I don't understand it on a deep enough level, but I feel like it's a matter of transparency. Like, are we trying to have limited transparency or full transparency or what? Because I think Bitcoin was designed a certain way. And I think, you know, people want extra privacy at different layers, and it's going against how Bitcoin was designed. But again, I don't understand it well enough to speak on it.
It'll probably take another big exchange or somebody to go under before people really put a big emphasis on having that link where you can check the proof of reserves wherever you're keeping it. And again, best practice is to hold your own keys, hold your own Bitcoin. But for some people, it's just not possible. I have a business and I keep Bitcoin with it. And just for accounting purposes, it's just makes my life so much easier to have it on an exchange. I know it's not
interesting. I was mining for a while under an LLC, and I kept it mostly on a cold card still. So, but like it did go through an exchange because like you can easily get like the price of his mined at and stuff like that. But I think Brains has that too, or at least has timestamps you can reverse it from. But yeah, I kept mine on a cold card.
I keep my business account on River, and it just they send me a monthly report that I just forward over to my accountant, so it just makes it easier for that. Especially because my accountant's not very familiar with this whole thing, so it just makes it easier.
See, I got mine on board. He almost was my my partner there. So,
You're better at orange pilling than me then.
He was on the edge already, so it was an easy push.
Speaking of pushing, did you see the ECB went ahead and did another 25 basis rate cut? It's the first time they did consecutive rate cuts since 2011. So I think it just kind of confirms that all the central banks are going to try and start getting their rates lower just because of the amount of debt in the system. I don't think it's sustainable to have rates at this high.
That makes sense. The flip side of that is, you know, the inflation is going to come roaring back. And when I say come roaring back, I mean, like, you know, the rate of increase is going to come back. So it's going to suck for everybody that's holding cash, I think.
Yes, I don't think holding cash is going to be smart over the next decade, at least. I think there's going to be, it's going to be very cyclical. It's going to go up and down, but I do think it's going to continue to increase. I know we had Joe on yesterday, and he still thinks that it's doable to get out of the situation you're in. I have a very hard time seeing a way where we get out of this situation that we're in.
I mean, it would like, even if it was doable, like if there was like a path forward, it would require like these half-brained politicians to all suddenly wake up and come up with a coherent plan and follow it together to fix it. And you know, the way our system is set up, you know, like the longest people really think is to the next election. It's not really like what's best for us in 10 years. It's really like what's best for me next election. So, you know, in the House, that's a 2-year thinking, the Senate, maybe 6 year tops. And then, you know, the presidency is 4 years. So it's one of the disadvantages of, you know, having frequent elections is that the time frame for things kind of shrinks down.
Well, I think it's going to come screaming at everybody over the next couple of years. We talked about it a couple of weeks ago, but the Social Security Administration said that they are going to run out of funds. They project right around 2030. So that's 6 years from now, 5 years from now, give or take. So that only puts one more election cycle before it's going to be a huge deal, and they're going to have to address it. You won't be able to skirt around it like they did with this election. No one brought up really the fiscal deficit everybody's in or the country's in. So,
yeah, it's pretty wild. It's getting that close, you know. And you know, when you hear 2030, I don't even think that's only about 5 years away.
Yeah, it's coming up quick. So I think this was the last. And again, this is me. I could be 100% wrong on this prediction, but I think this is the last election where they're able to get around not addressing this. And then I think that's where the real pain starts to happen, because there's going to have to be massive cutting, or there's going to have to be massive inflation to get out of this.
Yeah, they're going to probably do inflation, but
or massive wars to jump into.
I don't think that's going to save us. I think that revenue source is getting pretty tapped. And running up against like the limits of technology and capability, so I don't think that's gonna result in the booms that we want.
It won't result in the booms, but I would never doubt that they can always find more money for wars.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like there's much less appetite now than there was before. You know, I think after I don't know if I don't even know if we would go for it as much as we did after 9/11. You know, 9/11, America was very, you know, united and ready to, you know, seek some vengeance. I don't know what percentage would look at like a similar like attack on the United States and you know, be ready for more. Or do they say like, or would they actually look at the politicians and say like, you know, you morons caused this to happen, you know? So, I mean, you know, the concept of blowback has been kicking around for a while, especially after Ron Paul explained it to the idiots on stage during that debate, I think in, was it 2008? So, I don't know. I don't know if the, I don't know if we're in the same spot that we were before. Hopefully not. Hopefully we're more resistant to going down that road, but we'll see.
I agree that I think we have a lot more anti-war voices and louder voices and, you know, better free speech platforms now to hopefully, you know, if it is some type of false flag event or something, that we can, you know, push that back and not go the war route. So maybe there is hope there.
I don't know. I'm going to counter that with two posts I just did up in the Nest. So I guess it just got released this morning. Zelensky was in discussions with Trump when he visited the United States. It was about 2 weeks ago that he made it clear that he wants Ukraine to be a NATO nation. And if they don't have NATO's protection, they're going to acquire nuclear weapons. And yesterday, the Secretary General of NATO came out and said, quote, Ukraine, at the moment, it seems that Ukraine will be NATO member number 33. Maybe someone else pops up in front of them, but Ukraine will be a member of NATO in the near future. That is what we have decided in Washington. So the only question is about the timeline, end quote. So that's some big news there.
That's pretty wild to say that out loud. I mean, I don't think that's going to do is make the war continue. You know, like if people accept reality and say like, okay, like Russia, you get to keep, you know, Donbass and like the other region, your land bridge to Crimea, it's yours. Okay, whatever. Let's stop killing everybody. Let's get some peace. You know, we won't put weapons in Ukraine. All right, everybody's happy, move on. Well, everybody, you know, probably not Zelensky and the people I've sacrificed in on the either side of the war, but you get the idea. Like we can get the peace from there. But if they like really try to move Ukraine into NATO, Russia won't stop until there's no Ukraine left, so the problem's solved, right? You know, and it's like they're trying to fulfill the prophecy. They said, you know, they said, oh, well, Putin will just keep going. And it's like they're trying to make that happen by continuing to provoke, you know, more aggression from him. And then, like, in the grand scheme of things, I think I pointed this out the other day, but China's just chilling right now. You know, they're just sitting there watching us destroy ourselves. So the more we lean into that self-destruction, the easier it's going to be for them to, you know, establish some dominance. So I think that's something that has to play on the minds of the policymakers at some level. I mean, I think right now they're kind of asleep at the wheel. If Trump gets in there, I don't know, hopefully it's a little bit better. I know that his administration is very pro-Iran war, which is, you know, it's just, I won't say it's as dumb as the war with Russia, because Russia has a massive nuclear arsenal, but we won't win anything in Iran. You know, it's borders or mountains. They've been preparing for airstrikes for who knows how many years. You know, we see Israel unable to you know, stop Hamas operations in Gaza, the tiny little prison compound, and they've essentially flattened. So, like, to think that like Hamas could be that prepared and think that Iran is not that prepared is kind of foolish, if you ask me. So, I think it would just be catastrophic for us. And then you'll get like that not necessarily a false flag, but then I see like, you know, a carrier going down and they're saying, you know, we need to commit more troops or something stupid like that. So it's just a lose-lose. Like the only thing that we can do at this point that's good for America is to pursue peace across the board and start licking our wounds and, you know, try to transition peacefully into the multipolar world that I think is coming. I think trying to manage that transition peacefully is much better than trying to fight against it, because it's a fight that we'll lose and it'll just end up hurting Americans more in the end. So,
yeah, but I agree with everything that you said, Omar. I really think that they're trying to pick a fight. When you look back in history and you see how the other wars had started, there's a lot of similarities going on right now. And it just seems like There's plenty of opportunities for us to de-escalate the situation, but we just keep bumping against the ceiling trying to bring it up higher. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, historically, empires don't go peacefully into the night. It's just my idealistic view of what we could do to do best by Americans. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. I have very little faith in either mainstream party. The only politician I probably have any faith in is Thomas Massie. And unfortunately, he's not running for president. So, yeah, kind of leaves us hoping, you know. But I think that it's good that there are, you know, platforms like this and, you know, groups like Bitcoin Veterans that kind of help amplify that message. And, you know, I saw something today about, I forget who posted it. I didn't read through the whole thing, but I think Kim.com or something posted something about like a BRICS counter or something. But, you know, I think it's just rhetoric right now, but I think it does show like they are considering something other than the dollar. And I think the best thing for us would be if, and I don't mean us as like Bitcoin holders, I just mean like us as people, would be if something like Bitcoin, you know, took the place of the dollar, because I think it'll, you know, it'll push resources towards, you know, mining and doing this and doing that. And hopefully, you know, maybe it's a pipe dream, but hopefully that'll bring some stability, because, you know, they can compete in other ways other than, you know, bombing each other and stuff. So.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I have an article, or it's not an article, it's a post from Justin Betchler. He listens to the show. And so if you're out there listening, jump on up here, as I'd like to get your take on it. But he said in his post, and I'll throw it in the nest here in a second, the notion that the United States would buy Bitcoin to back the USD and eliminate its debt is economically nonsensical and politically unfeasible. You're allowed to believe this because it's true, and you will not be anti-Bitcoin if you do. Adopting Bitcoin undermines monetary sovereignty by ceding control to a decentralized protocol. So I think he's right with this. I think if we do acquire a strategic Bitcoin reserve, I don't think you'd be able to back the dollar with it, because that's not how modern monetary theory is based upon. It's based upon creating more debt by stimulating the economy, and this would go counter to that. So I think doing a Bitcoin reserve would be beneficial, but I don't think you'd see any meaningful changes to the way that our monetary policy is for probably a couple decades. If anybody has any thoughts on that, please, or counter arguments, let me hear it.
So I don't think it would be us that make the transition. I think it's a hedge against, I think I mentioned this before. I see like two possibilities. Either everybody's as stupid as they seem to be, and they're just taking on this like uncontrolled debt and inflation, or you could be like, you know, if you think of like the quote, like toxic Bitcoin maximalists that want to max out their credit cards to buy Bitcoin, like that's the other avenue you can go down. Right. So if I'm the United States, and if we are past, like, say theoretically, we're past the point of no return, right? Like, there's no salvaging the dollar. So what's the next best thing you can do? Well, you can milk it for all it's worth, right? Like, the dollar is, in Saif al-Din's word, probably the mother asshole of all shit coins, right? So it's, you know, you can use that to, you know, finance our, like, sound money supply by, you know, continuing to take out debt. Well, people will take it and use that to stockpile reserves of things that will be more beneficial to us, like Bitcoin or gold or whatever the case may be. I think they'll try to do both, or at least, yeah, I think they would try to do both, because like gold has the historic place as like the reserve currency and would potentially like take the place if the dollar were to collapse. But like from the like the transactional standpoint and like the like verification and like to prevent like the recurring problem of inflation, having like Bitcoin take that place, I think would be much more like sustainable and beneficial. You know, we were talking about like auditing and stuff. I'm sure that nations can come up with ways to show that they have what they say they have. And you know, you can settle like debts and stuff between nations, I think, a lot easier than like shipping gold around and whatnot. So I don't think it would be us. I think it would be like, you know, the BRICS are flailing about trying to come up with their own currency to get off the dollar. I would see them adopting Bitcoin. We talked about it yesterday. I would see them adopting Bitcoin because it'll kind of allocate resources and power to those that already have like, commodities like oil and gas and stuff like that. So it kind of, and like yes, they'll be giving, but they're not giving up. They won't be giving up sovereignty really, right? Like they'd be giving up. They'd be destroying America's hold over the currency, right? So America doesn't want to give it up. But for a lot of our, for any of our adversaries, just making us give it up by like adopting something like Bitcoin, I think would be a win for them. And I think that's easier to do than like a BRICS currency, because BRICS currency relies on like this big group of nations or a particular nation in that group. And I don't think anybody really wants to do that, right? Like you don't want to switch out the devil you know for the devil you don't, right? But something like Bitcoin could take that place, I think.
Yeah, and I would like to be in a room where they're discussing this, and I'd like to know how much it is being brought up about utilizing Bitcoin, because it solves their problem almost instantaneously. And all of the BRICS nations are really big producer of commodities, so they have a lot of gas and natural resources, and so they could be mined. And I think that they're mining a lot of Bitcoin, but they're just not making it public because it doesn't benefit them, right? There's no point showing your cards until you actually have to lay them down. So maybe that's doing a little deception, trying to talk about this, but in the background, they're going to try and implement a Bitcoin as a final settlement. But it's, yeah, I think because we're all Bitcoiners, we know how it's going to go.
Yeah, not only that, like think about like the added like control it gives them over over price, right? Like we know how like OPEC works, how they'll cut, like when they want to influence the price, they'll cut or increase production and stuff like that. They could, you know, maintain a steadier level of production and use that excess to produce energy if they had like the miners in place or somebody willing to, you know, like utilize it in that sense. So I think it kind of gives them a little bit more power in that, on like the actual sale of commodities as well, or at least like another avenue for them to utilize those resources if like the market isn't good enough for them. Like there was that point where I think it was like negatives, right? Like because it was costing money to keep oil on boats and stuff, right, within the past few years. So imagine if like there was like giant places you can go to just burn off this gas and mine Bitcoin or something, you know. I think that's another aspect of it that I'm not smart enough, I think, to factor it in on the fly here, but you get the idea.
Yeah. But I think that this is probably going to happen, you know, not this cycle, but over the next cycle or two, you're going to start seeing it become a settlement between countries and trading partners. Wade, I see you up here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. For the sake of balance, I know the election is a hot topic. The one thing Trump did say that in an interview the other day that kind of rubbed me a little wrong was that for the countries that decide to have a alternate standard, he was talking specifically about the BRICS, but you know, you could read between the lines. He said that he put 100% tariff on those countries in order to protect the dollar. That just kind of rubbed me a little bit wrong. Any thoughts?
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Wade, so I'm going to parrot what Joe Calasari had said on it. And so he thinks that, yeah, he doesn't want, the United States does not want countries to lose the dollar. Is if people start trading outside of it, they're going to lose the reserve currency status, and it has huge implications for that country. So I can get why he's trying to, why it's a talking point. But I think just as the world continues to chug along, we're going to become a more multipolar world. And so there are going to be different countries using different currencies until we can convince everybody that Bitcoin's the way to use for trade. My thoughts on it, I think it's just a talking point. It's kind of like, hey, we're flexing our muscles. Don't do this. But I don't think those countries really care, right?
I don't know. I can see how that could affect countries like El Salvador. As far as, you know, the alternative, it's not like we have an alternative right now.
I don't know if anybody saw anything with Elizabeth Warren in that debate, but yeah, I just don't want something like this to affect the smaller nations who are trying to onboard Bitcoin.
I think if they make, like, once they make that choice, though, I think it's too late, right? It's like everybody's laughing at you. You say, "Stop laughing at me!" Like, they're just gonna laugh harder, right? Like, so, like, once they make that switch over to, you know, if it were to be Bitcoin or something else, and you say, "Oh, well, we're gonna tariff you," then, like, I think the, you know, the air's already out of the bag. I think they've already lost the power there. So, I don't know. I don't know how effective that is. And, like, I think there's, like, also, like, all the thought that goes into it, right? Like, if they're making that decision, then, you know, they probably factor that in, but they value the sovereignty that they gain without it, without the dollar. So I don't think it'll change anything by that point. It's just, like Holman said, it's just a talking point. You know, it's trying to sound tough.
Also, how do you implement it, right? What happens if a country is doing 99% of its trade outside the USD, but they're doing only one trade in USD? Does that mean that we're not affected by the 100% tariff? So I don't know how you'd be able to, where you draw the line on that, where you could go ahead and start implementing those tariffs. I hope I answered your question.
The whole, like, unintended consequences thing too, when they put the embargo on buying Russian oil, and then Russia ended up selling more oil in other parts of the world other than Europe. But yeah.
100%. Wait, did we answer your question, sir?
Oh yeah. Yep. He covered it.
I think it would have been cool if, when he announced that 100% tariff thing, if he said, "And this will replace the income tax for all Americans." I think a lot more people would be down with that.
Yeah, no income tax, and just do a straight flat tax on everything. I like that. I don't know. There's so many things that have been hit on during this election cycle, but I want to say that was Trump had thrown that around at one point. Correct, that he's okay with just doing a flat tax on everything, removing the income tax? Or was that a dream, or is that someone else I'm just thinking of? Anybody?
It's a fantasy of all of ours.
No, it's just a fantasy. Figures, too good to be true. But it's actually a perfect segue into the other topic I wanted to hit. Yesterday, Italy released that they are going to raise their capital gains tax on Bitcoin to 42%. So it currently sits right around 26%. So it's not quite doubling, but it's about 80% increase on the amount that they're going to tax it. And so I wanted to know what other countries' capital gains tax on Bitcoin looks like. So I got a couple of the top six G20 countries. And so the US has a 37%. The UK has 20%. Canada does a 50% of the capital gains that you've made is at a tax bracket of your income tax. So that one's a little bit varied. Germany has a 0% if you've held it on for more than a year. Otherwise, it's just taxed at your income tax bracket. France has 30%. Japan is variable depending on how much. It goes from 15 to 55. And Russia comes in at 13%. So I think this is where the thesis of the sovereign individual comes into play, where if you have Bitcoin, and we all can, I think, agree that the price is about to start doing some big things. So it's going to be able to allow people who've been holding Bitcoin for this whole entire last cycle to move to different areas to kind of escape this, escape these high tax countries or environments. And so it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out for these countries and what it would look like for people leaving due to their policies. So if you guys have anything you want to add to that, please let me know.
Yeah, I think the politicians were just throwing some red meat to their socialist commie base. Like, wealthy Italians already don't live in Italy. They left 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's not like the Bitcoiners even have to leave. They can just stay where they're at.
they know what their value is. They don't. They just know they won't do anything with their Bitcoin until they relocate.
I like that, but I also like to live in like where we become financially independent and we don't have to be underneath the thumb of our governments because we've invested our time and our energy into Bitcoin. We're able to move about in these countries. If you're going to be repressive against us, I'm going to go to somewhere else. So I know El Salvador, a huge push showing that or saying that they're going to have a lot of tax incentives for new businesses, especially with taxing on Bitcoin. So I'm really excited to see how this plays out over the next 4 to 6 years, just how the migration starts to change and where people are going to start moving. But for me, my goal is that hopefully everybody's has more financial independence with their Bitcoin holdings, and you can just kind of give the middle finger to all these countries and just say, look, you're going to do this, you're going to suffer the consequences, not me. So that's kind of my Bitcoin dream for everybody. But really quick, I want to give a quick thank you to all of our partners. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Black Sheep Ammo, restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training at paladintowertactics.com. Punch Plate, give us a thumbs up at a fist in the on the audience right there. There we go. Stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate at punchplate.com. So we're getting close to the top of the hour. Was there anything that you guys wanted to talk about or hit on a little harder that I may have missed?
I just want to loop back to, you mentioned self-custody before. You know, if you're kind of skeptical of it, you can always like get your hardware wallet and then just like wipe it, like reset it intentionally and then reset it back up with like your seed phrase and stuff. And like I did that, I had to do that by accident one time and it made me feel a lot more comfortable about like how easy it is to recover everything if you have your seed phrase, which will... I recommend not keeping it on paper. You know, you got punch plate. That's one of the options for getting it on something metal. It'll just, you want to have for it. So it really isn't as hard. Once you start looking into it and you get it going, it's really easy. You saw me complaining about Gemini because I usually use Gemini as my onboarding ramp, and for whatever reason, I got locked from my account and they won't let me move my Bitcoin. And, you know, the upside is I don't have very much on there because I just take it and I move it off onto my cold storage. But if I had all of my Bitcoin on there, I'd be freaking out right now. I'd be like probably having a panic attack. Definitely do self-custody. And, you know, that kind of ties in with the ETF stuff too. You know, bear that kind of thought in mind when you're looking at the ETFs. Versus something where you can actually own your own seed phrase and everything like that, like Unchained, or I think there's a few other ones out there that do it. River maybe, and I think Swan does it too. But there's ones where you can like have your own hardware wallet to access your IRA. So that's all I want to mention.
Yes. So I definitely think everyone should be familiar with their hardware wallet, whatever type you're using. The only caveat I would put on there, Yomar, is if you're going to wipe out your seed phrase for the first time and then back it up and then start over, make sure you have like very little Bitcoin in there. You'll be feeling absolutely horrible if you do that and you don't do it correctly or you wrote down your seed phrase wrong. So start off first with nothing and then just go ahead and just get more comfortable with that. But if you have any questions, reach out to us. We have a lot of guys at our disposal who are very good with this tech and they can walk you through it. There's also a lot of videos online that you can go to as well. So we're always here to answer any questions you all have. It's just convenience for security. So it's really up to how everybody feels with that. Anybody have anything else they want to hit on? Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this a little bit early today. So I want to thank everybody who tuned in. who was listening to us, who engaged with us, or just for everybody who had us on the background to drown out the voices in your head. It really means a lot to us. It means a lot to me. It makes my job easier. So I want to give you a huge thank you. Go out there, click on the top of the nest, find Operation Gabriel. Again, go ahead and share those links. Let's make sure that we show the world what Bitcoiners can do and what Bitcoin veterans is doing for the people affected by Hurricane Helene. Again, we're still going to be out there. We're not going to be finishing this up anytime soon. We're going to continue to push on and help everybody that's affected because unfortunately for them, this is a long road to recovery. So we're going to keep everybody updated. And again, I want to give you to everyone who's helped support, whether that's by donation, retweeting that link, or going out and volunteering. If you hear, please reach us at, get you that you're in the right direction. If you just make sure that you're able to be not a reliability. Sorry. But that's it. We'll be here tomorrow, same time, 10 o'clock Eastern. We'll have a video podcast next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern time. I don't know which guest is going to be, but I think it's going to be a recap of everything going on with Operation Gabriel. So I have confirmation next Tuesday night, we will have our video podcast again. Thank you, Jacob, for doing everything in the background. It really makes my job a lot easier. Thanks for everybody who joined the panel. Eomar, Wade, Hunter, AC, Bitcoin Carney. I really appreciate that. And everybody, just go out there today, have fun, talk about Bitcoin, and just go crush it.